Larry Tye has written about American heroes before, including a biography of Satchel Paige. His latest is about Superman, the high-flying history of America's most enduring hero. Now, Superman is probably credited with as much as anybody making the comic book industry a great success. But his signature S logo has also appeared on lunchboxes, underwear, peanut butter jars, sneakers, and Shaquille O'Neal's bicep in tattoo form. He has starred in radio and television and five different feature films, with a sixth on the way. Larry Tye's book is published by Random House. It was published last year.
Just out in paperback.
And now it's out in paperback. But last year, because it was the 75th year since Superman was born, although he was born fully adult, I'm very happy to welcome Larry Tye back to our show.
Great to be back with you.
So what was it that what is it that comic book fans have come to call the original sin involving Superman and his creation?
So it was in 1938, after 5 years of trying to get their story published, finally Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster convinced the publisher to do it. And they were so desperate to get this story published that they accepted the combined total for the two of them for the rights to Superman in every medium forever, the grand total of $130.
And then very quickly it became a big success. Did they say, wait a minute?
It was almost immediate, and every 10 years they said, wait a minute. They would be excited about what they were doing. They had fame. They were making salaries that in today's terms would be hundreds of thousands of dollars, and then they would get angry, and then they would sue. And then they would promise that they would never sue again when they lost. DC would take them back. They'd work for another 10 years and get angry again.
How long did they stay with DC? Well, it wasn't originally DC, was it? They made DC into the comic book giant that it was.
It's true, and they did, and they stayed with them full-time for those first 10 or so years, and then they came back at various points, particularly Jerry, over the next 20 years.
But then they had real hard times. Why did they have such hard times if they made a lot of money during the times that they were with DC?
Because any time they tried another comic book, the next one was Funny Man. It wasn't so funny, and it never quite struck gold again.
Can you explain the Superman curse?
Absolutely. The curse sort of, it started with George Reeves, who was the first TV Superman, the Superman that I still see when I close my eyes in the 1950s Wonderful Adventures of Superman series. And as he got older, and as he had to start wearing a girdle and start using food dye on his hair, and got into an accident and was taking some painkillers and was drinking too much, he got depressed. One night, he shot himself in the head. They found him naked on his bed, splayed there, and that began the curse. And the curse was that lots of people who worked on the film, on the comic book over the years, had bad things happen to them, most famously later, Christopher Reeve in his accident.
Now, is it just a coincidence that we have two Reeves playing Superman?
It's one of many wonderful coincidences, yes.
How did what makes Superman such an enduring hero? Do you think that the fact that he was born in the middle of the Great Depression was a factor?
I think there were two factors, and they seem like they're contradictory. One was that he evolved over the years more than the fruit fly. In the 1930s, when we were in the middle of the Great Depression, he was the butt-kicking New Deal liberal that we needed then. In the 40s, he helped take us to the war. In the 50s, he was looking along with the rest of America under every bed for communists. So he gave us precisely the hero that we needed at that moment. And yet the contradiction is that I think it was his constancy and the fact that he, more than any other hero, seemed to instinctively know the difference between right and wrong, that in an era when we have plenty of dark heroes like Batman and all too many fraught heroes like Spider-Man, Superman represents the hero of the light, and that's what we keep going back to.
Well, there were others. It was Captain Marvel who was really popular when I was a kid. He's disappeared. Superman always struck the kids of my generation as being a little too perfect, and I think that's the reason that Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four and others became popular in the 60s.
It was, but you and I may have been on the opposite side of the battles when we were growing up. There were the Marvel kids who related more to Spider-Man and to his anxiety and to his lack of perfection, and there were the Superman kids like me who felt like he was such a clarion call to do right that.
Now, he had a dual identity. Was he the first to have a dual identity? Because pretty much all the ones who followed did.
He was the first to do most of these things. Jerry and Joe claimed that everybody from Batman to Captain Marvel were ripoffs on Superman, and I think that his dual identity was better and more convincing, and also it was the first.
You devote a whole chapter of your book to explaining the connections that have been drawn between Superman and many different faiths. What are Superman's ties to Judaism?
So he has three compelling ties that I see. There are actually a lot more, but the one is that when he came from Krypton, it was with the name Kal-El, which in Hebrew translates into voice or vessel of God. Was it an accident that two Jewish kids from Cleveland call their character the voice of God? He also came down with a very compelling backstory from the planet Krypton. It was parents trying to save their firstborn son, and they saved him by floating him out into space. He ends up in the middle of the American heartland, adopted by two of the most consummate Gentiles you could ever imagine, John and Martha Kent.
But he wasn't found in the bulrushes.
Well, he wasn't, but he was raised as their own, and he turned out to be pretty exceptional. But the last and most compelling piece of evidence to me is that any name that ends in the word M-A-N is one of two things. Mm-hmm. It's either a superhero or a Jew, or in this case, both. So when you think of the word S-U-P-E-R-M-A-N, know that it is not pronounced Superman, it's Superman.
Now, Jews were major creators of comic books from the start. I don't know whether the publishers were Jewish as well, but how did that work within the context of a country where Father Coughlin was quite popular on the radio? Anti-Semitism was a lot more open. Lindbergh, there were all sorts of other people. In fact, America's immigration laws could be called kind of anti-Semitic at the time.
So I think it would have been more of a problem, given that Superman's creators, Batman, Spider-Man, all were Jews. All were Jews because smart, young Jewish writers then couldn't get jobs in more lucrative fields like advertising and like the fancy magazines. So they went to this lowest of low professions, it seemed like comic books. And I think if they had been given bylines on their stories in the early days, it would have been more a problem with some of the anti-Semitic forces you talked about. But in fact, it worked out brilliantly. And in fact, some of them changed their name, like Stanley Lieber, to Stan Lee, so you didn't know he was Jewish.
Now, was he popular around the rest of the world by the time World War II broke out?
Yes. So he was translated from his earliest days into dozens of languages. And everywhere that I went, I found people who grew up in Serbia and read him in Serbo-Croatian. And everywhere in the world, he was a global figure.
But he didn't enter World War II because it would have given the Allies an unfair advantage?
Yes. So they came up with a brilliant scheme. They had him take his eye exam. Clark Kent went in, and instead of reading the eye chart in front of him, he read one with his X-ray vision 3 rooms in. He failed his eye test. He stayed home, and he helped Uncle Sam do everything from sell war bonds to, in every ration kit that went overseas, it was a comic book, and it was generally a Superman.
And then there was, he wound up on radio, later on television. Was there an attempt to keep the character consistent in all the media?
Actually, there was an attempt to weave in new stories. So he learned to fly in one medium. In another medium, we added this expression, not just truth and justice, which were there from the beginning, but the American way. Every medium sort of blended in to help tell a more complete backstory.
He had to learn to fly because originally he was somebody who could leap because he came from a planet with much heavier gravity.
Yes. So at the beginning, all he could do was leap, and then suddenly one day in the comic books, it turned out he could fly, and it was wonderful. And his powers expanded and contracted over the years, depending on what the audience response was.
And were there people at DC who were controlling all of those changes?
They were trying to. It was partly the writers and the editors of the comic books and the TV and the radio shows who had a big role, and then there were people at DC who tried to make some consistency.
And what did they do on radio when Clark Kent became Superman? Did they have different actors?
Unlike George Reeves, who could never convince you that it was a different character that was Superman and Clark Kent, on radio they had one guy named Bud Collier who could change his voice so dramatically that you really were convinced it was two different guys.
And then on television they had the added problem of special effects in a time when they were rather primitive. They had to show him flying. They had to show him doing all sorts of things that now would be pretty easy with computer-generated imagery.
That's true, and I think it was we were willing to suspend belief. Nobody asked why when a crook unloaded all of his bullets on George Reeve and they bounced off, why he had to duck when they threw the gun at him. We wanted to believe.
Then came the movie, 78, Superman, the movie, directed by Richard Donner, starring Christopher Reeve. Now, Christopher Reeve seemed to me to be the perfect Superman. He looked like the comic book character.
So 2 days ago, I was in L.A. doing a program with Richard Donner, and he said that when Christopher Reeve walked in the room, he knew he was ready to let him fly out the window. He knew that was his Superman. They had gone through hundreds of A-level characters. None of them worked. He wanted an unknown, and Chris Reeve was it.
How did Donner come to be chosen to direct? He was replaced by Richard Lester, who had previously directed The Beatles in A Hard Day's Night for the second and third Superman movies.
So Donner says he did it for two reasons. One was because he loved Superman. He grew up as a kid with Superman, and he wanted to save the character, and he felt the producers were about to destroy him. And the other was he was offered $1 million.
Mm-hmm. But he was replaced by Richard Lester?
He was, because they had such battles, Donner and his producers, Alex and Ilya Salkind, who produced three of the four Chris Reeves movies, they got along so poorly that they used any excuse to get rid of Donner.
Although Richard Lester was kind of known as a loose cannon himself.
He was a different loose cannon, and they had somehow more control over him.
How were the films received by the fans? Did they complain that it was inconsistent with their image of Superman?
They loved Chris Reeve in the first one. They liked him a whole lot in the second one. And the third and fourth, he admitted that he was unlikable.
Why?
Because there were really no stories. It was out him trying to destroy the world's nuclear arsenals. It was more tongue-in-cheek. When you stop taking Superman seriously, the fans will revolt.
There were a lot of lawsuits as well.
There were endless lawsuits. There were lawsuits continuing from Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, and there were lots of lawsuits over the movie and people's treatment by the Salkinds.
Now, he in the comic books, he's been killed off and then revived. I didn't think you could kill off Superman. But was there a fear at a certain point that it was just going on its own momentum and losing popularity?
Well, there was in the 90s a fear that people were taking him for granted, so they killed him. And the only people then who didn't seem to understand that if you killed a character in the comic books, you could bring him back were the executives at Time Warner and Warner Brothers, who were very alarmed.
And Christopher Reeve died, but they came up with another, Christopher, to help save the franchise, Christopher Nolan.
They did indeed.
And there's a new film coming out?
There is a new film coming out, and I think Warner Brothers won't consider it a success unless it makes north of $1 billion.
Have you seen it?
I have not.
What's the advance word on it?
The advance word from people I was with this weekend who saw it is that it's going to be great, and it's going to convince you that a British actor can actually play this all-American Superman hero.
And that who is the British actor?
Henry Cavill.
Somebody
you would only know from the Tudors show, and he's, again, an unknown. That's what they do best with.
Now, I'm curious about how you choose your subjects. You've written a book about Satchel Paige. I understand you're currently working on a biography of Robert F. Kennedy.
Yes.
Is there some through line that I'm missing here?
Well, so with Superman, there were two reasons I was interested. One is because I thought as our longest-lasting hero of the last century, he would tell us something not just about him, but about us. But the real reason I wrote it is I wanted to be 10 years old again, and I felt it. Every night when I could call it work, going home and reading comic books and watching old Superman TV shows, it's not a bad way to make a living.
And you talked about how he changed with the times. He became a cold warrior after he had been a liberal. What is he today?
So most recently, he quit the Daily Planet. He's a blogger, and I got a call from anxious journalists from Australia to England wanting to know what was up. And the fact is, he's changed jobs, changed haircuts, and changed whether he was living or dying, married or single, repeatedly over the years.
And Lois?
And Lois, I think, will go back and forth between being his lover, being his sweetheart, and being his wife.
Now, the Siegel and Shuster received creative credit for the television show of Clark, Lois and Clark. Did they receive money for that?
They actually got annual annuities that were in the hundreds of thousands of dollars for the last years of their life.
Larry Tye's book, Superman, The High-Flying History of America's Most Enduring Hero, is published by Random House. And I want to thank you so much for being on our show today.
Great to have been with you.
Does he have a Twitter or Facebook, by the way?
Yes. LarryTye.com.